Welcome to the View My Seats podcast. I'm your host, John Lord. The Iditarod Trail Sled Dog Race, the last great race. Every March for the past 43 years, mushers and teams of 16 dogs take the perilous 1,000-mile trip across the Alaskan wilderness through blizzards, sub-zero temperatures, and high winds. It normally takes 7 to 10 days for the champion team to cross the finish line in Nome. Winners, dogs and mushers included, are regarded as celebrities in Alaska. This year marks only the second time in the history of the Iditarod that the starting line had to be moved from its traditional spot in Willow, Alaska, a small suburb outside of Anchorage, to Fairbanks, some 300 miles north. The reason for this change can be attributed to yet another mild winter in Alaska, as there simply is not enough snow in the greater Anchorage area to run a dog sled race. My guest, Christine Delamore, is a news writer and editor for NationalGeographic.com, whose recent article, Dog Days of Winter, Alaska's Lack of Snow Forces Change in Iditarod, tackled many of the challenges facing race organizers and the people of Alaska. To begin with, I asked Christine to share some stories from her previous travels throughout Alaska.
I have been to Alaska twice, and both times I've been, I've met people who are in the sort of dog sledding, dog mushing culture, and they're very passionate people. You know, they spend, seems, all year round kind of preparing for the races and raising their dogs, and it's very much, you know, it seems a key part of their sort of rugged frontier culture in Alaska. There for a fellowship that was focused on climate change effects, so I was staying at a research station called Tulik Lake, which is in the Arctic. So I'm one of the lucky people who've actually been to the Arctic, and is actually, when you drive up the highway in Alaska, there's a sign that says you're entering, you're crossing the Arctic Circle, which is really cool, good photo op. But once you get up there, it's very very stark, very barren. You know, there's tundra everywhere you can see. They have a lot of rivers, but the animals are generally hard to see. We saw some musk oxen and a few trout in the streams, but otherwise, you know, you really get the sense that you're kind of in the middle of nowhere in the wild, and it's kind of a neat feeling, but also, you know, can feel intimidating at times, too. You know, you find a lot of people who backpack in the Arctic National Wildlife Refuge because they're after that feeling of, you know, kind of being overwhelmed by nature and feeling small and insignificant. Some people really like that. It helps them, you know, connect with nature and feel something that you might not be able to feel in the other 49 states. One of the more interesting elements of that fellowship was studying the effects of climate change that are already happening, and something that always sticks out in my mind is when we travel to a certain part of the permafrost, and that's what you call frozen soil, it's right under the surface, it had actually collapsed into this gaping hole, and that's something called thermokarst. And they think that these collapses are going to be more prevalent as the climate warms, and Alaska is projected to warm up to 7 degrees Fahrenheit in the next 50 years or so. The one that I was in seemed like it was at least like 20 feet deep, and they can have serious effects in other parts of Alaska for, you know, if it happens on a road or on an airstrip or an Arctic village, for example. So the Iditarod is one example of how, you know, climate is impacting various parts of Alaska very acutely.
Climate change. As Christine's story on NationalGeographic.com explained, over the past 50 years, Alaska's rate of warming was twice the national average, with the average state temperature increasing by 3.4 degrees Fahrenheit. Climatologists predict that by the middle of the 21st century, average annual temperatures in Alaska are projected to increase by an additional 3.5 to 7 degrees Fahrenheit. Trouble potentially for the Iditarod, but life-altering for the people living in those affected areas.
Yeah, actually, in the news yesterday, I was just reading an article about an Arctic village who needs to be relocated because the sea ice that used to protect their village, so they're kind of on a peninsula, is melting every summer, and they are much more vulnerable to the effects of huge storms. So, you know, a huge storm could literally come and wipe them out. And they're actively looking to relocate.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's going to cost millions of dollars to do that kind of a thing.
But how aware are Alaskans on the effects of climate change?
I think it depends who you talk to. I mean, if you talk to the people who live on permafrost or the people who live, you know, farther north, they're definitely very aware of it and see the effects every day. So I would say they're extremely concerned and want people to take action on it. You know, the people maybe living in Anchorage and a little farther south might not see the effects quite so acutely and might not think about it quite as much. But, you know, a lot of the people who live in the northern parts of the state, like you mentioned earlier, their livelihoods are based on the environment and they need a healthy environment in order to survive. So they're very concerned. I've spent more time with scientists, and scientists don't always, you know, show their emotion. They're more interested in reporting their data and,
yeah.
and you know, doing their work. But I will say that I think there's a sense of urgency that comes from the scientists working on climate change as they realize that, you know, there's not a million years to figure this out. They have to do as much research as they can now, you know. So they're definitely feeling under the gun to get as much information as they can.
Scientists point out that there are several factors contributing to this relatively mild weather in Alaska.
You know, a lot of the people I spoke to or have spoken to, you know, emphasize there's always variability in regions where you have normal temperatures or below normal temperatures and then sometimes above normal. And that's just a natural occurrence with weather patterns. The jet stream that was persisting over Alaska, and it has been persisting over Alaska for much of the winter. And because of that, it's called a wavy jet stream, apparently. Since it's been sitting over there, it's been bringing warmer temperatures and precipitation to the region. And I think one of the scientists I spoke to at NASA was saying that particular atmospheric pattern is influencing a lack of snow. But he would definitely not suggest that there isn't climate change going on, you know, as a long-term trend. It's difficult to pinpoint, you know, one event and say this is because of climate change, because scientists need long-term data to come to a conclusion. So, you know, sometimes scientists don't like you to even say X is because of climate change, because you need more, you know, of a long-term data set to determine whether. Some scientists made the point that under the right circumstances, if you have global warming in the background, it can amplify the effects. So, for example, in Alaska, where this season where it's been warmer and more rain, that kind of thing, the extra heat from global warming could be melting the snowpack and increasing the, you know, the lack of snow that they're seeing in the Iditarod. So there can be this also with this amplification effect.
Taking all of the changes to the environment into consideration, I asked Christine to switch gears and talk a little bit about the history of the Iditarod.
Well, from what I've read, it goes back to the gold rush days. The only way to deliver mail was a dog sled. And it was actually a trail called the Iditarod Trail during the gold mining era because it went along the Iditarod River. And after World War II, the Alaskan transportation system began to change, and there are faster methods of travel, like snowmobiles and airplanes. So in the 1970s, the dog sled tradition looked like it had almost, you know, nearly disappeared. But the founder, whose name is Joe Reddington, decided to create the long-distance race to keep the culture and the tradition of dog sledding alive. And he was able to help the Iditarod Trail become recognized as a historic trail.
With the warmer weather this year, race organizers couldn't just wait for the temperatures to drop.
Well, based on the research I did, it sounds like they basically start preparing, you know, in January or earlier. The call to change the start location was made, you know, earlier this year in February. So they already said that people were starting to stock food and, you know, decide how much weight they're going to carry, those sort of things. in January, the race organizers were doing helicopter surveys around Willow, which is the town where the race starts, and they observed that the snow conditions were just very poor, so there just wasn't enough snow, to put it simply. And after they saw that, they realized that the race would not be able to be successfully undertaken from that point, so they decided to move it to a point where there is, or place, excuse me, where there is snow, and, you know, that they've done this before, so they can kind of anticipate what the pattern will be like in Fairbanks.
As Christine mentions, 2015 will not be the first time the Iditarod starts in Fairbanks.
It was exactly the same reason. So there was unseasonably warm weather. It was actually in 2003, and they were observing deteriorating conditions that they're observing this year, and that's when they decided to move it to Fairbanks. And we should note that Fairbanks is 359 miles north of Anchorage, so that's quite a long distance, and so it's extremely, you know, not extremely, but there is a difference in the weather conditions.
With climate change, one has to wonder whether the long-term viability of the traditional Iditarod race is now in jeopardy. Regardless of the temperature, however, what won't change is the indomitable spirit of Alaskans and the traditions this great race has established.
No, it's a hardy bunch. I mean, Alaskans are probably the toughest of the Americans, I would say. There's something called the Red Lantern Award. I don't know if you came across that in your research, but...
What's that?
The award is given to the last team to finish the Iditarod. So you mentioned that it's usually completed in 8 to 10 days, but sometimes people have taken up to 32. So the tradition originated in 1953. They decided to award the person who still managed to complete but came in last. Oh, yes, definitely. I mean, I think Alaskans take a lot of pride in their state and in their culture. And this is just an example of, as I mentioned earlier, that rugged frontier mentality that they have that kind of displays to the world that they're tough people and they're able to survive in these kind of conditions.
And if you're planning on racing in a future Iditarod, just make sure to leave the poodles at home.
The Iditarod requires that only northern dog breeds are allowed to race in the Iditarod, so that includes animals like Siberian Huskies and Alaskan Malamutes. And those dogs are particularly hardy, so, you know, they're well-equipped to handle the winter conditions. I think in the 1990s, there was a European poodle that was entered. Or actually, I think it was in the 80s, but in the 90s, they decided that they would restrict it only to these hardier dog breeds that are able to handle the elements.
How did the poodles do?
I think the poodles didn't do too well. They were dropped off at the checkpoint because they had frozen feet and hair matting problems.
The 2015 Iditarod starts on March 7th. My thanks to Christine Delamore from NationalGeographic.com. This has been the View My Seats podcast. Thanks for listening.